Welcome to Northern Goal, the football podcast from the Evening Express and Pressing Journal. In this week's episode, Aberdeen reached the Scottish Cup semi-finals, but Scott McKenna's season could be over. Cali Thistle are out of the national trophy and Ross County get back to business. Elsewhere, Peterhead and the Highland League fall foul of the weather, and a picture starts to emerge of when Cove Rangers could be crowned kings of League 2. I'm Ryan Cryle, and with me in the studio today are Paul Third, Callum Law and Sean Wallace. How are you guys?
We're very good.
Good, thank
you. Ryan, you?
Yeah, all right. Eager to get going. As always, we'll start with the Dons, who won 2-0 against St Mirren and Paisley to set up a Hampden showdown with Celtic next month. A lesson in game management in brutal conditions, folks?
Nail on head. That's the best way to sum it up.
Oh, well, you know me.
That's right. Next subject? No. It was dinging down from start to finish in Paisley, and Aberdeen handled it a lot better at the third time of asking, I think, given their two previous visits to Paisley than the home side did. As comfortable a night as any Aberdeen fan could have hoped for from their team, I think.
It was brutal conditions, was it? I mean, it was a real... Yeah. Woolly underwear moment.
The journey down was not pleasant, that's for sure.
I was surprised at Jim Goodwin coming out afterwards and saying that he thought St Mirren were the better team in that. I mean, having watched the game, does passing the ball along the back four make you the better team? And having one shot on target in the whole game make you the better team? Aberdeen had three decent chances. Curtis Mayne's one was ruled offside, but they all ended up in the net.
I feel as if Joe Lewis just wanted to have a dive just to give himself something to do, because he genuinely had nothing the whole night. It was that comfortable for the Dons.
Well, what Goodwin said, it's one of these things that's maybe too easy to throw at the Dons. They get up through a brilliant goal through Lewis Ferguson, and then if they don't think St Mirren are going to break them down, they can sit on that lead. That sort of night, it's the way to win the game, isn't
it? It's something that suited Aberdeen as well, though, isn't it? Because we've heard too often, maybe since the winter break, about teams sitting in against them and how it's been difficult to break them down. Whereas getting that early goal, Aberdeen could almost flip it and be the team that just sort of sits in and makes it difficult.
For me, Saturday was what I would call a vintage Aberdeen performance under Derek McInnes. They get the first goal and it's game over. That's what has been historically the way they've gone about their business under the manager. They've had a struggle maybe the last year or so, and they've given away late equalisers and what have you, but there was no danger of that on Saturday.
Never looked in any trouble. No. Losing that game.
What do we think of the goal then? That's what you want your centre, well, your attacking centre mid to be doing, isn't it?
Oh, it was top drawer, outside of the foot. When you look at it back, I know some might think, well, the goalkeeper could maybe do better, but he's bracing himself thinking the ball's going across him into the other corner, and that's what makes the finish such a top drawer one from young Fergie there.
It's a fantastic move as well. Matty Kennedy, great ball, saw the run from Fergie, just put it inside. And that was it. I mean, it was any chance Aberdeen potentially slipping up. Ferguson delivered that goal and it calmed the nerves at a ground where they've struggled at so far this season.
Is it a surprise? Maybe that was only Ferguson's third goal of the season, because any time you see him score, it's usually important goals or getting great goals to watch.
I would say yes and no to that. It's a surprise that he's only got three, but on the other hand, he's been playing a different role. Because Ojo was out for 3 months, and Bryson's hardly been there, which means Ferguson's had to be the guy in front of the back four, that buffer, helping Dean Campbell out. Now Ojo is able to come in and play the senior role, and it's freed up Ferguson to push further forward.
I spoke to Ferguson after the game, and he admitted himself that he hasn't been scoring enough games this season.
Scoring enough goals, you mean?
Scoring enough goals, yep.
But it's what you want. It's if he's going to be a number 10, if that's going to be his main position for his career, he has to be adding more goals to his game.
Oh, absolutely. But what is he, 20? Yeah. That's it. I mean,
You forget that.
He's still just learning. How many 20-year-olds in Scottish top-flight football are in double figures? I don't know. Answer's in a postcard for me. I can't get one.
He's a fantastic player. Never has a bad game.
No.
I was going to...
Big game player as well.
You mentioned him in the build-up to that goal as well. Matty Kennedy really impressed me in that game on Saturday. I just felt every time Aberdeen give him the ball, he looks just to get a yard and a half yard and put a ball in the box. Can there's nae almost overcomplicating at times. It's put the ball in the danger area and gives the team more chance of scoring.
Well, Sean spoke to Ferguson after the game, I spoke to Kennedy, and he was making a point. He now feels as if he's been here, 5 weeks? He's getting to know his teammates, know which runs they're making, where to put the ball, and you're seeing that. It's always when you're watching Aberdeen and a new player, you're always trying to, well, who does he remind you of? And Johnny Hayes is the name that keeps coming up.
Yep.
He's not as quick as Johnny, but he can be relied to take the ball and take it 60 yards down the other end of the park and not lose it, or win a throw-in, or win a corner. And he's quickly becoming a key guy in that final third for Aberdeen.
There's a hell of a shift defensively as well. He's always powering up and down that flank, and he puts in key tackles. I mean, he's a grafter, much like Johnny Hayes was.
A Derek McInnes player, if ever there was one.
Well, it could be a masterstroke getting him in January rather than waiting until the summer.
Aye.
I mean, he could be a game-changing player, such as a semi-final against Celtic.
He's got a big role to play this month, a big role.
Obviously, it ended 2-0, Aberdeen getting a second goal from the spot late on. Sam Cosgrove won the penalty coming on and then scored the penalty. What do we make of Sam Cosgrove's role at the moment as a kind of an impact substitute almost?
That's what he is for me. He's the guy that comes off the bench and can help you close out a game. It's funny because we've talked about this a couple of times in here. Curtis Main is a better fit for the team.
Yeah.
Sam Cosgrove is the more reliable goal scorer. Which one do you pick if you're the manager? I don't know. But for me, I play Main. We've tried the two of them together. I'm not sure yet if that's going to work out long term.
The two of them together might have worked, but then the Ross County game, they got half an hour and it has to change because of Dean Campbell sending off. So it's almost a bit of a false experiment.
That's fair comment. We haven't seen enough of them as a front two with 11 on the park to see whether they can be the successful relationship or partnership, should I say, that we think they could be.
It's a good dilemma for the manager to have, though.
I think Cosgrove's, since he's been benched, has responded quite well, though. In games he's come on and he seems to have a bit more of a point to prove and looks maybe more determined to help the team than he perhaps did in the starts before he got dropped.
Yeah. When you know you're the top dog and you're the guy that's playing every week, can you get complacent? Perhaps. You could make the same case for Shea Logan for a good few years. Hernandez has now come in. He's still short of match fitness, but it's no surprise or coincidence that since he's arrived, Logan's performances have picked up.
With Main, though, if Main is to be the starting lone striker, he'll also need to start regularly scoring goals.
I thought he was hard done by in a cup tie. I think he was just marginally onside. He timed his run perfectly. I think that goal should have stood.
I disagree.
It's a difficult one from the camera angle of the replay if you actually watch it, because it's not bang in line with the defender. I think Curtis Main was marginally offside, but it's difficult to tell because the camera angle actually makes it look he is offside.
He steps back in just as the ball is coming, so
I think he timed it perfectly.
If it had been VAR, what would they have given?
Well, if it was VAR, we'd still be waiting on the decision. We'd still be waiting on the decision now.
Okay, so the result sets up a Scottish Cup semi-final against Celtic on April 11th or 12th. Is this a game that Aberdeen would prefer to have, given they probably have to have it anyway, they'd prefer to have it in the semi-final rather than the final and the pressure, the maybe added pressure that comes with that?
Oof. I would rather play Celtic in a semi-final. I think a final, when it's just, this is it, they're chasing what would have been, will be, should I say, a quadruple treble if they get there, makes it a far more difficult task. I think there's more pressure on both teams in a semi-final, especially Celtic as the holders and the all-conquering domestic force that they are at the moment. Semi-final's probably a better option, I think.
I'm going to put my neck on the line and say that Aberdeen will win the semi-final. And for the good of Scottish football, because it looks terrible, a team dominating every tournament.
Well, do you cut that bit out just for the weekend of the game, just as evidence?
But
and then I'll be vindicated after that. I'll get it on a T-shirt.
Club will be selling them after it if they get through as well.
So the Dons look like they'll be doing that without Scott McKenna. His hamstring tear, we expect to be confirmed later today, is quite serious and could be season ending. It's a big blow for Aberdeen, isn't it? The left-sided centre-back.
You should be answering this question, Ryan. Yeah. You're the man that last week brought up the... Scott McKenna's been off the boil. So, what do you think?
I think Aberdeen do need Scott McKenna. Despite the fact I do think his level has dropped slightly of late, and because of confidence for Scotland and for Aberdeen, I think he is a player at the moment that is first choice, one of the first names on the team sheet. I don't see who plays the left side of centre-back, whether is it Devlin and Taylor? Will they work together well as a pair, well as McKenna and Taylor have been working?
I'm interested to see how, if it's Devlin and Taylor, how they get on, because Mikey Devlin, when he has had starts here and there, he's looked all right, but whether it's a niggling injury or Ash Taylor came back from his injury and then he's on the bench, he hasn't really been able to get a run going. But if McKenna is out for a couple of months and Devlin can stay injury free and gets, say, 2 months worth of games where he knows he's playing every week, I think you could see Devlin back to the sort of levels he was at when he first joined Aberdeen.
In Devlin's debut season at Aberdeen, I thought he was possibly...
first 3 months, he was brilliant.
The best player at Aberdeen until he picked up that injury away with Scotland.
Actually, what about Andy Considine? Why didn't Andy Considine come into left centre-back and then Greg Lee, he'll be back soon?
Are you reading
his copy in the Evening Express today? Greg Lee's on the way back, he goes to left-back and then problem solved.
Well, if Andy Considine goes in, he'll just do what he does wherever he plays, which is a very reliable job. You know what you're getting from him and he won't let anybody down.
Just give Andy Constein a wee call up for Scotland as well.
Maybe this is the back three is going to become the reality, and it's Considine, Devlin and Taylor all the time.
Okay, well, we'll have a quick chance to see what Dennett McInnes' plan might be for the rest of the season. Two Premiership games this week, tomorrow night away at Kilmarnock. Paul, Sean, you're both going. How do you see that one going?
Another long trip down to Rugby Park. Yeah. That's how I see it going.
At least there's no extra time this time.
Well, Aberdeen must feel like they own Kilmarnock by this point. If you're a Killy fan, you must be sick of the sight of Aberdeen coming to Rugby Park, because worst case scenario, Aberdeen leave with a point. That seems to be their... Honestly, it's every time they go to Kilmarnock, it's, oh no, here we go again. Kilmarnock can have a great game, be 1-0 up with 5 minutes to go and lose 2-1.
I'm back in Aberdeen to win. I think the low point of the night for Paul would be listening to my patter for 6 hours in the car. So, Aberdeen normally do well down at Rugby Park.
The aim for the weekend is obviously to beat Hibs at Pittodrie and make up for that quite painful 3-0 loss at Easter Road earlier in the season against another team that's looking like they'll be in the top six come the end of the campaign.
Fast on their heels, they could be more than top six. I mean, if Hibs are playing tonight as we're recording this, the Edinburgh Derby, they win that, I think that puts them a point behind the Dons. It's heating up, it's really heating up.
The Livingston are catching them as well.
I don't think we're looking at a two-horse race for third spot anymore. It's every chance by the end of March this could be wide open between the four of them.
I mean, a race for third, it's like a race no one wants to win, is it? Aberdeen and Motherwell, both their league form has been pretty poor. Motherwell especially, they've been atrocious. But Aberdeen haven't been able to capitalise.
And it's opened the door. Yep. Slowly but surely, Hibs and Kilmarnock. I mean, I think it was about 10, 11 points at one stage. So now you're talking
Hibs
about
and Livy, you mean?
Sorry,
Kilmarnockers.
I stand corrected.
Hibs and Livy must be fancying their chances.
The Dons are obviously a point behind Motherwell at the moment. Dons sitting fourth, Motherwell sitting third, and that coveted sort of Europa League qualifying spot. We'll talk about Motherwell a bit more in a moment because they're playing one of our other teams, Ross County, tomorrow night. First of all, it was announced yesterday the Red Shed is going to become a permanent fixture at Pittodrie in the Mirkland stand from next season. What do we think of that? Good thing? It seems to have been a positive.
I'm
on the fence.
Sort of sceptical about whether it'll have the same effect as it has had this season, because I think the first tie it was used against Dumbarton seemed very positive and it was a lot more buoyant an atmosphere than it probably would have been for a game like that. The second tie against Kilmarnock, the atmosphere probably wasn't quite as good, and I think for a lot of people it's perhaps a novelty to have it for a couple of cup games and go there and everyone and have the banners and things like that. And if part of it as well was it was unallocated seating And if you're selling season tickets in that area, I'm guessing that you will have to have some kind of allocated seating.
You can't manufacture an atmosphere every home game. It has to be the team that are generating it from a pitch.
And that was the issue with the second cup tie against Kilmarnock, in that they came and sat in and made life really difficult, just squeezed all entertainment value out of what should be a thrilling Scottish Cup tie. And by the end of it, the fans didn't like it, and they were quick to let the players and the manager know. And that is the other side of this coin. If it's great having your passionate group of supporters all together and things are going well, it's going to be noisy and vibrant. If things are not going well, it's going to be a bit sinister.
Yeah. By the end of the last cup tie against Kilmarnock, it was almost like a dead shed, was it? There wasn't much atmosphere coming from it.
All right, well, we shall see when next season rolls around. Okay, next up, we'll discuss, as we have promised, Motherwell once more with Ross County's return to action tomorrow night. Okay, so Ross County are back in action. They had a weekend off because they weren't in the Scottish Cup anymore, obviously. But they play Motherwell tomorrow night at Fir Park, which is a game that, as we've said, has big repercussions for Aberdeen. But Ross County, do we think they've lost any momentum? They had a good result against Aberdeen at Pittodrie, 2-1 win, before their week off. What do we think?
I don't think they have, because during this week off that they've had, they've also managed to get Ross Stewart back from a hamstring injury, who was, in the first part of the season, their talisman, really scored when they won at Fir Park earlier in the season as well. So I think it's a good thing, and sometimes a 3 weeks beneficial in terms of just the co-managers can work on a few things in training and come up with a strategy for this game. And I quite fancy Ross County to leave Fir Park with something.
They'll enjoy their trip to Fir Park. That was their only other away win in the league this season, and the pressure is all on Motherwell. They're the team, it can't buy a win, especially at home. So it is, you can see the ingredients here all adding to a night of trouble for the Steelmen, I think.
8 games without a win for Motherwell, which is atrocious form. That somehow they're still in third spot.
I don't know what it says about Aberdeen's
failure. About the rest of the league.
Yeah, I don't know what it says about Scottish football.
Ross County's aim at the moment just has to be to keep picking up points, not let themselves get into a spell where they're not picking up any points, because it's so tight down the bottom. Well,
it's 10 points, and if you're now looking at, we're into March, and this is a home straight now, and this month could be done and dusted and they're safe. It could be completely all over before they even hit the split.
What has impressed me about Ross County all season, and we've seen it again in the last couple of weeks, is the resilience almost of the group of players. If you look at the number of late goals they've scored this season to pick up points, like St Johnstone a couple of weeks ago, they're down to 10 men because Donaldson's injured, goes off injured, and they've used their subs. Billy Mackay scores in stoppage time to get a point. And then at Pittodrie against Aberdeen, okay, they were playing against 10 men, but it would have been easy to settle for 1 point and go, that's not a bad result at Pittodrie, score another late goal to win it. And even early part of the season, they scored late against Hibs twice, Hamilton, lots of teams to pick up points. And I think that's why they're a good bit clear of the relegation
zone.
That
is the one advantage. I mean, we've focused a lot since we started doing this podcast on their poor defensive record, but we can't ignore that. Of the teams in the bottom half, County have probably the most firepower.
Yeah, the squad goals.
Yeah.
Striker banging form with Billy Mackay.
And if Ross Stewart can come back and get up to speed again quickly, he's a huge asset. And Gardine can't be too far away either, is he? And I mean, his creativity, even.
And you're seeing Cowie back, you're seeing Vigers back, Draper's in the squad again. It's
all
a lot of experience,
good,
hardy
experienced Premiership midfielders.
They're going to be fine.
If we think they can get a result against Motherwell tomorrow night, what are we thinking about Sunday when Rangers visit Dingwall?
Again, they won't fancy it. I mean, I was at Dingwall when Rangers beat Ross County, and it was as comfortable a night as Rangers have had all season. It won't be on Sunday.
The big thing surrounding that as well is, I think, what state will Rangers be in when they go to play Ross County? Because Stephen Gerrard, some strange comments after they were put out the Scottish Cup, and they're playing Hamilton at home midweek. You'd expect them to win that, but if they don't, then who knows what sort of setup they could be in there.
Let's be honest, we can cut through all this. Domestically, Rangers season's over.
That's finished. Totally.
That is the other side.
That's a good Glasgow term there, isn't it?
Just cursed to play Hamilton.
It's all over.
Forever.
I think Gerrard's been shown to be very naive, surprisingly so, and recently. And
but also he's like, inexperienced as a manager as well.
Is it two years at?
Aye.
Would an experienced manager get 2 years of losing all six trophies?
And spending £20 million?
Yeah, not a chance.
Nope.
No chance.
But it's... But even if it was an inexperienced manager, they probably wouldn't get either, but he's a big name. That's the whole, what this all boils down to. It's why he's at this time.
It's a terrible decision.
But back to the point.
You can't. You have to drop Morelos.
Back to the
point. Hold on.
Back to the point. I think you have to drop Morelos. I think you have to.
What he's done. You can't drop your top goal scorer ahead of a must-win cup game when it's the last chance to score.
You have to drop him, Sean.
It was a disciplinary matter. You keep it in house, you play him, and then you discipline him. You don't drop your top scorer for a must-win.
A guy
game.
Who you've protected when every mishap, every red card he's had.
Just shooting yourself in the foot.
That's it. I understand. No, but Sean's power. Point. But I think that's the thing. Is Steven Gerrard has has.
Going
let him go
beyond.
so far. There comes a point when you have to say no. But back to the point, I think Ross County, maybe not all three, but I can see them picking up a point against Rangers on
Agreed.
Sunday.
Well, I'm glad we got back round to Ross County there. Something the listeners really care about.
Come on, the stuff.
We're very sorry.
Next up, we'll discuss Cali Thistle's Scottish Cup exit at Easter Road, 7-goal thriller. So, Inverness Cali Thistle are out of the Scottish Cup. They lost 5-2 on Friday night to Hibs at Easter Road. Callum, you had some quite strong opinions on this game.
Well, I really do feel for Cali Thistle even a few days after it now, because the way Nick Walsh, the referee, performed at Easter Road, it was always going to be an uphill struggle for Inverness to take anything from the game. I mean, the penalty that Hibs get in the first half, Mark McNulty goes down. Maybe it is a penalty, but Mark McNulty also has a hold of Kevin McCarty's shirt that was 6-1 and half a dozen of the other, if you like. But he gives it anyway. Mark Ridgers makes a great save. Terrific. Second half, Carl Tremarco's pulled down in the box with a score at 1-0. It's more of a penalty than the one he gave in the first half. Doesn't he give it? Carlier Thistle are caught short at the back. Hibs go up and score 2-0, and that's probably cup tie over. And I thought that was really poor. Another thing that frustrated me just watching it was he went through a spell in the first half where every time Cali Thistle committed a foul, he was handing out a booking. Now, maybe some of them are justified, but every foul isn't a booking for me. And he set a precedent for himself, because later in the game, when there was fouls from both sides being committed that probably were bookings, he wasn't handing out those bookings. So I thought it was a really poor performance from him, and Thurdy's going to disagree with me here, but I thought Brad McKay was slightly hard done by with the sending off
red
as well.
Red card, feet high, sorry.
But it's this great grey area with sending offs of, I didn't really catch him, but there was intent to catch him. Intent, but intent and actually
it's
doing damage
play,
is a different
Callum,
thing.
It's dangerous but play. Feet are high off the ground, and that's what the rule is.
Maybe so, but what I would say again, and this is all what about to rate, but if that was at the other end and it had been, say, Paul Hanlon or Adam Jackson or whoever on a Jordan White or an Aaron Doran, I think that a Hibs player, the way he was refereeing that game, a Hibs player would have got a booking rather than a red card.
To defend the referee, because someone has to.
Yeah, absolutely. defend him.
Now, you did raise that he maybe set a precedent of bookings and he sort of backed off from booking people because he knew the way it was going. But Charlie Trafford booked really early on. Could he have been off and committed a second?
He could have been. He had a couple of fouls after it. But the foul he got, but again, I'm going to come back to this. The foul he was booked for a start was probably a harsh yellow. So, Ken, it's the inconsistency that causes players and managers and me to get quite worked up about these
You know what we need? We need Sandy Roy in here to tell Callum how it is.
I don't think any referee goes into a match with any form of bias.
No, I'm not saying he did, but the way he performed was incredibly poor on Friday.
For me, he got one decision wrong.
But still a decision that if you can have this back and forth about what decisions he got wrong, but I'm guessing the one you're saying he got wrong, the Tremarco yes. penalty shout, that completely changes the game. Penalty, second goal doesn't happen. Even if the Cali Thistle penalty taker puts the ball in the stand, the second goal still doesn't happen and they're still in the cup tie.
As a manager from this part of the world once said to me after a game, I'm not saying the referee's biased, I'm saying his performance was biased.
So I wouldn't say that.
Makes sense.
So obviously,
but it was a poor performance.
Cali Thistle going at the break 1-0 down, courtesy of Jackson's quite an exquisite finish over Ridgers. I think it was another one of those where the keeper's got in his mind that the ball's perhaps going low, so when it loops over the top of him, it doesn't have time to react. Then, obviously, you've mentioned the Tremarco penalty shout after the break, but then Hibs score, they go 3-0 up. At that point the game's over.
The third goal was a poor one to concede for Inverness's perspective.
You sure it wasn't the referee's fault?
No, I couldn't find a way to blame him for that.
Silver lining wise, is it one less distraction for Cali Thistle now? Obviously the main objective of their season, let's be realistic, Cali Thistle probably weren't going to win the Scottish Cup. So the main objective for their season is getting out of the Championship, get back up the Premiership. They're sitting second just now, but they're just ahead of Ayr United. They need to be focusing on the league.
Yeah, I mean, they've had a good cup run, but yes, they've got to get up. Financially, it means so much to the club to be in the Premiership. Even though Dundee United are doing their best to just down tools and hit the beach early, they're still going to win the league. But for Cali Thistle, it's got to be finishing second.
Although they're second, I mean, it's such a tenuous position because there's only 5 points separate second from seventh. So like a wee drop in form and you could fall right out of that playoff spot. Well,
it's interesting they're playing Morton and then Alloa this week. And I mean, Morton's probably from looking like they were banging playoff trouble at the other end of the table, are probably the form team in the division just now. They're unbeaten in 8 in the league, so it just shows you how if you'd hit a run of form, it can pick up for them. And as Sean was saying, if Cali Thistle were to dip, they could be in trouble.
I think Cali Thistle will edge it though. I think when teams have to make a midweek trip up to the Highlands, they don't like it.
No,
Cali Thistle will be okay the first game tonight.
If they could beat Morton and then Ken, you've seen teams struggle at Alloa, but you'd fancy Inverness for
Alloa are a good team.
Aye, well, Dundee United's gone there twice and picked up 1 point out of 6, so it just shows you. But I'd fancy Inverness for 6 points this week, which would be much needed.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll wait and see then. We'll know one of those results tonight. Next up, we'll discuss the lower league teams: Peterhead, Cove Rangers, and Elgin City. Okay, so now we go into the lower leagues. Peterhead's game at the weekend at Stair Park against Stranraer, who are bottom of the table. Looked like a good opportunity for Peterhead to pick up some much-needed points, but that game got postponed because of a waterlogged pitch. Good to have those games as some money in the bank for later in the campaign, Callum. Is that a sort of positive you can take from this?
Well, money in the bank's a bit strong. You've still got to go and win those games, but I'm sure that will be encouraging for Peterhead that 2 of their last 10 games now are against Stranraer, one at Balmoor and one at Stair Park. So you'd be looking to take 6 points for those 2 games. And if you do that, it should put you far enough away from the automatic relegation place. But then with Forfar and Clyde as well are really in there. I think the last 8, 9, 10 weeks it'll be very nip and tuck as to who's in the playoff place.
And Clyde had a huge result at the weekend, beating Falkirk, didn't they? That's a dagger to the heart of a Blue Dune fan.
I think it's worse still that Peterhead are going to the Falkirk Stadium this Saturday. Thankfully, Falkirk have a game in between against Raith, so they can maybe take out their anger against them. But you can imagine Falkirk being fired up for that. But Peterhead, they're going down there. Pitch will suit them, that AstroTurf. They like to pass it about, so you never know.
They're due a big result, Peterhead, to be fair. Because they've had a few close calls at Raith this season. Somewhere like Falkirk would be the perfect chance to really kick-start your season for the running.
How are the Blue Toon fans taking the season? Are they realistic that just staying up?
I think at the start of the campaign, the support were realistic that staying up would be, and consolidating in League One would be a good season. But I think they are starting to get a bit more tense with the way it is, particularly being clinical in both boxes has been the thing that has let Peterhead down this season. And last week against Forfar, dominated the game, other than probably the last 5 minutes, dominated the game completely, got themselves in front just after half-time and really had chances to go two up. And once they don't go two up, the fans get nervous and they're sort of, if they give the ball away, they're sort of getting in the players' backs. The players, as it goes into the dying minutes, they get nervous predicting a one-goal lead. And what happens? Forfar score with 8 minutes to go, and it's sort of like, here we go again almost. That's been happening too often this season. So I think nerves for both the support and the team in some of these games has been a bit of a problem. But
you sort of touched on it there. Obviously, some teams have seasons where they're down the bottom of the league and they're getting scudded every week. But for Peterhead, if they were to have a sort of negative end to the campaign, would it feel like a campaign of missed opportunities in games?
I think so, because they've lost, I think it's 10 league games or 11 league games possibly now by one goal, which in most of these games, I think we've touched on it before, most of these games have been a goal, or sometimes the winning goal has been an individual mistake or, you know, something, a goal that they really shouldn't have conceded.
It reinforces that League One is the most competitive league in Britain, I think.
Oh, it's crazy this season. But
so, Peterhead, the other news this week was that Peterhead will be doing the rest of the campaign, or most of the rest of the campaign, without Scott Hooper, probably their most experienced centre-back. He has gone down with glandular fever, is
sent
that right?
For Jordan.
He's been
Jason even.
Jason. But Scott Hooper, he's been feeling a bit tired and sort of not right for the last month, 6 weeks apparently, but he's been playing on through it. But a couple of weeks ago, the Airdrie game was the last time. By that time he did a warm-up and just didn't feel capable of playing, so he's been going back and forth to the doctor and he's eventually been diagnosed with this, and he's out for a minimum of 6 weeks basically, so unlikely to see him again this season.
Who's left in central defence then?
Jason Brown, Luke Bolan, who's on loan from Aberdeen, and Kami Edey. But given that Kami has spent most of this season and a good chunk of last season on the bench, I'd imagine it'll be Jason Brown and Luke Bolan that are the starting two.
It's a young central defence, isn't
aye.
It?
Aye.
Not what you want in this situation.
It's a time to learn. Jason Brown, for
make
a
or break.
You'll be a man, my son.
For
I can hear it.
For a 23-year-old, he's got plenty of experience, lower league experience, so it's up to him to sort of be the commanding senior defender.
Okay. In more positive news, Cove Rangers continued their fantastic season with a 3-0 win away at Stenhouse Muir. We're starting to, as we'll touch on in a minute, see where the title could be won in promotion to League One gained. But first of all, on the game itself, it was two Mitch Meganson goals, either side of a goal from Rory McAllister, sort of reinforcing the fact that this is a strike partnership that could be quite deadly in the seasons to come.
It's turning out, as we probably predicted when Rory arrived, it was that extra firepower just to blow away every opponent they're going to face to make sure they go on to clinch this title, and that's how it's playing out.
It could turn into a procession for Cove, just with that firepower they've got. And I mean, I think, was it their second highest scoring club in Scotland, just behind Celtic?
Yep.
And if you look at their recent results, they're winning these games when they've had, well, on Saturday was Jamie Masson missing. I think previous games you've had Mitch Meganson missing. So they're now able to absorb the loss of key goal-scoring figures in their team and still be winning these matches. That's what you need if you want to win a title.
Plus Edinburgh City are starting to show a bit of nerves in the running.
It's like last year all over again, well, for them when they were chasing Peterhead. They fell away.
Edinburgh City for chasing for three quarters of the season last year, and then the final quarter and a bit just blew up totally, ended up finishing third, and it looks like the same's almost happening again.
But if you're a Cove fan, well, you know what's coming. It's
theirs to lose totally now at 10 points.
Okay,
we've done our sums. We worked out
we've
yesterday.
Got Rachel Riley involved.
So,
right, Ryan, run us through.
So, now this is maybe unlikely at the moment given Edinburgh City's current run, but if both teams win their next four games, they've both got 10 left to play. They win their next four games, they play each other down in Edinburgh on March 28th. So if Cove were to then win that game, that would put them 13 points clear and would mean that they could win the title at the Balmoral Stadium the following week against Elgin City. Should Edinburgh slip up, and by that I mean lose at least one or draw at least two, Cove could win it at Edinburgh. Wouldn't that be the ultimate sort of stab in the gut?
If you're an Elgin fan, you're hoping that that second scenario where you just painted fans out.
So it's all ifs, buts and maybes, as these things always are, but you'd expect Cove to beat Brechin at the weekend, wouldn't you, to start this run towards the title?
But it's within grasp, that's the thing now.
Oh, definitely.
The finish line is there, they can see it. I think that'll sharpen the focus. I think they get over the line.
I think Cove go away in the next four games. I think we'll sort of count on them to win their two home games, but I think when they go away from home, it's Cowdenbeath and Stirling Albion. Yeah. Cowdenbeath, to me, Edinburgh City have just slipped up there. Is that a place where Cove possibly don't get 3 points?
It's their hardest game. I think it's their hardest game. And if you were to pick one that you thought, ooh, this could be the sticky wicket, that would be it. But no, I just think with what's at stake now, that they'll do what needs to be done and get the 3 points.
Cove look like a team that are going to win a title. Even if things aren't going their way, they still manage to grind something out and get 3 points.
They've got that pedigree. I know it's Highland League, but they've got that pedigree. They know what it takes when you're at this time of season and it's, right, let's go on and get the work done here. And they've done it the last couple of years. They're going to do it again this year.
Just opening the cliche book here, but winning is a habit, isn't it?
And it's one that's not being broken very easily.
Okay, so on teams that hopefully will start developing that habit, Elgin City won 2-1 away at Albion Rovers at the weekend. Back to winning ways and a milestone of their 1,000th SPFL goal since joining the league in 2000.
It's a game where I would have hated to have turned it late.
That's exactly
sure.
What I was going to say. If you arrived at 3:10, you'd been gutted with the way that turned out. But
why is that, Callum? Explain to us why that was.
Because all three goals are in the first 6 minutes. Robbie Nobar for Elgin Albion go straight up the park and equalise 6 minutes. Kane Hester 2-1. And I mean, the 1,000th goal's obviously a milestone for Elgin, but I think far more importantly was getting back in the playoff positions. And I think with the way it is just now with themselves, Queen's Park, Cowdenbeath and Stirling Albion, you're going to see a lot of nip and tuck in the final quarter of the season and teams changing all the time.
You're spot on with that one. I can't predict who would be the playoff teams that are going to make it in the League 2. It's so tight. Queen's Park are the form side. Elgin are there. But there's a few others in and about. It's going to go right to the final day, I think.
With Elgin as well, it's which Elgin turn up. Because if you get Elgin who perform like they can, as we've seen them do this season, they can beat anybody, as they've proven. They've beaten Cove, they've taken points off Edinburgh. Shane Sutherland's still to come back for injury, but they can then also get the other Elgin who maybe slip below the standards they'd expect.
It's that winning habit thing you were talking about, Ryan, when it comes to Cove. They know how to get across the line and achieve the goal that they're chasing. Elgin have had a recent history of being right there and just missing out to death, and that'll be in the back of the minds if you're an Elgin player, Gavin Price or a supporter. Is this the year we're going to get there? Because I think they've only done it once.
Twice. I believe.
Sorry,
in 19 previous attempts.
And both our League 2 teams, their fates are now linked, because should Cove fail to get the results at Cowdenbeath and Stirling Albion, it negatively affects Elgin City's playoff chances.
What I would say, just to be brief on that, if Cove could win the title that day against Elgin, I think there's no team. There's Elgin are the team that would relish being potential party poopers. Aye, more than anybody.
Okay, so that covers the lower leagues. Next up, we'll discuss the Highland League, where there was one game because
be
of the weather conditions, but we'll try our best. Okay, so in the Highland League, the only game that survived the rainy weather was Bucky Thistle versus Inverurie Local Works at Victoria Park. Callum, you were there. 0-0 doesn't seem like it was the most engaging affair.
Well, that's not really correct, to be honest with you. It was somebody that was there, I thought, given the breezy conditions and quite a fiery pitch, I thought it was a good game of Highland League football, but I would have said Bucky were definitely the better side, who had the better chances, but Locos maybe were a couple of breakaways could have nicked it, but in the end it's probably a point which suits neither side really as they look to try and finish second. But I'm not going to divulge what was said, but I think Andy Lowe made it clear to his Inveruri players afterwards that he wasn't really happy with their performance, but it was a point on the gained on the road, I guess.
Why at this time of year in Highland League circles have we all seen about fiery pitches as opposed to bobbly pitches?
Well, Bucky's right on the coast, probably. That's probably why they can handle the rain better than some of the other, Fort William or Huntly, for example. What else can
I was in my mind to say bobbly there, but I just said I thought I'd say fiery just for.
But it's just a word that managers always use, and I always think it's just a strange way to sort of
describe a surface.
Well, it's go around the truth.
The pitch was dire. Weather conditions.
No, it wasn't dire. I mean, it was playable on like every other pitch in the league. So you can't say it was dire. But
bobbly and fiery passes. It's just like a euphemism for my team couldn't string a pass together.
Okay, so it was one of those thrilling nil nils. So we've managed a minute and 15 seconds on it.
I could go on for longer if you wish, but
I'm sure you can, Callum.
Elsewhere, the games that were called off, we had Brora hosting Fermartin United at
Dudgeon Park.
Christ, left me there. Forest Mechanics game against Fraserburgh was also off, as was Fort Williams game against Huntly and Wick Academy's game against Strathspey Thistle.
Brora, so it's as you were. That's the short version.
As you were entirely.
Brora still look the most likely to lift the Highland League title. It's all but done. This week we've got a heap of games. We've got games on Wednesday, we've got a game on Friday night, and we've got games on Saturday. First of all, on Wednesday night, Clatnacuddin host Fermartin United, Fort William host Strathspey Thistle, and Rothes play host to Bucky Thistle. On Friday, Inveruri Local Works welcome Fraserburgh to Harlow Park. That should be a good one. Callum, are you at that one?
I'm not, actually.
No, Jamie.
It's Jamie, but what I was going to say before, the talking point for me this week anyway is the return of Clach being able to play a game at Grant Street Park. That's two months just over since the fire, so it's good to see them back.
Hopefully
able to
they get
play
a good crowd
again.
For it. I hope they do. It's been tough. That's a tough for a Highland League club to not.
To not have your home games and your gate, and even hearing the Clach chairman speaking about it, they had quite a lot of work with the insurance before they could even get the repair work started. So it's been a tough period for Clach.
Are they fully functioning again, or are they using porter cabins? Yeah, have I heard that this week?
Yeah, my understanding is the away dressing room is okay, but the home one was badly affected, so they've had to put in a temporary measure in the car park for the home players. But it has a shower, I hear, so I'm sure if that's all you've got to put up with to get to play at home, I'm sure the players will manage.
I'm sure the players will be delighted to get back to playing at home again.
Okay, and then the Saturday games, we've got Brora. They play host to Wick Academy, Bucky Thistle welcome Huntly, Devon Vale welcome Forest Mechanics, Fort William should be playing Nairn County hopefully at Claggan Park, Rothes welcome Fermartin United, Strathspey host Keith, and Turriff United play Lossiemouth at the Hacks. Okay, so that concludes this week's episode of Northern Goal. Should you want to ask us anything, this is a new feature by the way, should you want to ask us anything, make a point, or generally berate us, please get in touch.
Understand why.
I'm about to write an email now.
Please get in touch by email at northerngoal@dctmedia.co.uk. That's Draper Cosgrove Tremarco Media.co.uk. Thanks, of course, to Paul Third, Sean Wallace, and Callum Law for joining me today. Thank you, guys.
No problem.
It's been a pleasure. And if you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, please subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And finally, enjoy the football wherever you are this week. Hope you loved the episode, and if you did, we'd be grateful if you could leave us a review or rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to pick up your copies of the Press and Journal and Evening Express every day for the best football writing and analysis in the North.